You know what the scariest thing is? To not know your place in this world. To not know why you're here. It's just an awful feeling.
Maestro, have you ever read the book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by the late Dr. Stephen Covey?
No. If I had, I'd be a lot more effective.
At least you'd have seven good habits, right? Because you don't have any good habits
right now. Seven would be nice.
Seven would be fantastic. Well, it's a good read. I haven't read it in years. I probably need to reread it just to be reminded of some things. But one of the seven habits of highly effective people that he wrote about is called seek first to understand, then to be understood. And the idea behind that is a lot of times people in a conversation or in a relationship, they're so worried about defending their own point of view that they never really try to make an effort to really understand the other person's point of view. And his argument was you should make a sincere effort to understand where the other person's coming from. Doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but you should make an effort to understand it. And if it is sincere, that will be detected by the other party. And then when you try to articulate your position, they will hopefully respond in kind and be more articulate or be more receptive to your point of view as well. Now, part of that process requires that you get a little bit into the other person's mind. And there's some other minds that I really don't want to get into, kind of like yours. I think the inside of your mind, Maestro, might be kind of dangerously dark.
So you're kind of like saying, walk a mile in another man's shoes.
Or another man's brain, which is not necessarily a smart thing to do.
But if I walk a mile in another man's shoes, then at least I'm a mile away from that person when I decide to stick to my original thought.
Until he comes for his shoes, and then you have a problem. He might be angry
but
at that because you stole his shoes. You stole his shoes. Why did you do that?
So I'd have a head start.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully they were really good running shoes. Then you'd have a good head start. By the way, welcome to another edition of Career Callings with your host, Robbie Romeiser. Here, our mission at Career Callings is to help you avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision by helping you find, prepare for, and pursue the work God created you to do. You can join us today by phone, text, or email, phone or text at 864-381-7649, 864-381-7649. Or by email at robbie@careercallings.net. That's robbie@careercallings.net. Now, the reason I started off with that reference to the seven habits of highly effective people is because I want to kind of help you and myself get into the brains of a hiring manager. If you're looking for a job, if you're heading in a different direction, in a direction the Lord has called you to, obviously that will require looking for a job in that field. And most of the time, maybe it's even safe to say all the time, you're going to be talking to a hiring manager. Now, that hiring manager might be the owner of the company or it might be someone who's got the title of hiring manager. But either way, your average person who's interviewing you and other candidates for a particular position are going to have certain things on their mind, certain things they're going to be looking for in you throughout the interview process. So I thought it would be wise for me to share with you a few lessons I learned by reading an article recently from lifehacker.com, and the article is titled, What Hiring Managers Wish You Knew About Applying for a Job. So we probably won't get through all of these because there are quite a few. But here are the ones I want to start with today. The first thing that was mentioned in the article is that the hiring managers want you to be prompt, but don't want you to arrive too early for the interview. A senior career consultant named Leela Reynolds mentioned that if you're 30 minutes or more early, that can actually be hurtful to you, not helpful to you, because it could distract the hiring manager if he or she had something else planned in those 30 minutes. If they know you're out there waiting, the odds are pretty good. They're going to feel a little bit stressed out or hurried to try to get you in a little early. So the optimum time to arrive early for a job interview is somewhere between 10 and 15 minutes. Now, if you happen to take some other advice I've heard before, and I'm sure you may have as well, where people say, hey, you know, you probably ought to want to leave your home or wherever early enough so in case you get lost. Maybe you want to target getting there 30 minutes early so that if you do get lost, you'll have some time to recover. And that's fine. If you do that, though, don't show up at the job interview 30 minutes early. Go grab a cup of coffee at your favorite coffee shop or a Coke at your favorite whatever shop and wait until about 10 to 15 minutes early, and that would be perfect. So that's that example or that suggestion from hiring managers. Another suggestion is don't apply for a job unless you meet the qualifications. Now, what they mean by that is not necessarily that you meet all of the qualifications. The target that many people recommend, many hiring managers recommend, is that you are at least 80 to 85% qualified for the job. You don't have to be 100% qualified, but 80 to 85%. Because if you're 50% qualified for the job, the odds of you being able to overcome your deficiencies and be a help to the organization are pretty small. But if you have 80 to 85% of the qualifications, most companies are more than happy to train you on the other 10, 15, 20% as long as they know that you bring to the table enough skills to get started pretty quickly in helping them solve their problems. And a good example of that is an article that I read or reviewed some time ago here on the show. It was an article by Liz Ryan, and she writes many times for Forbes, and she told in that particular article that a lady named Amy was a client of hers, and Amy had been in the animal shelter business for years, and she really felt closed in because she couldn't find any animal shelter opportunities in the market she had just moved to. And Liz tried to help her understand that you already have transferable skills and abilities that you can use in any number of jobs. For example, she knew how to run a budget. She knew how to fundraise. She knew how to lead people, lead a team of people. And Liz had encouraged her to apply for a call center job. And in that call center job, her job would have been to lead a team at the call center. And yeah, she didn't have call center specific experience, but that's the 15 to 20% of stuff she could learn because she had the other 80, 85% of what she needed, running a budget, running a team of people, leading people towards a common goal. So that's an example of what we mean by having 80 to 85% of what's necessary. The next thing that hiring managers really recommend that people do is research the company that they're interviewing for. As obvious as this advice is, nearly all of the 24 or so hiring managers who were interviewed for this article said that this is one of the biggest and most common mistakes they see from interviewees. Not researching a company. It's kind of like going to a test without knowing the subject it's on. You know, if you're going to show up for a math test and you hadn't studied any math, you got a problem there. All right. So a hiring manager will be impressed if you know the company's background, if you know the company's mission, if you know its values. And if you can articulate these things to the hiring manager that in a knowledgeable way, it's going to be impressive to them. It'll help you stand out from amongst your competitors. You want to know the company's narrative before you step into the interview room. And what I mean by that is, you know, how did the company get started? What's happening with the company and industry now? Where's the company headed? What are its major problems and how can you help them solve those problems? And that's what we mean by understanding the company's narrative. And that may be mostly researchable online. It may also require, in some instances, talking to someone who works there before you go in for the interview, or using a wonderful research tool like Glassdoor.com. Glassdoor.com, we've mentioned before on the show, and we'll link to it again on careercallings.net/radio on today's broadcast. And Glassdoor.com is a great resource where people who work for various companies, they go on there and they review the companies they work for. They talk about what it's like to work there and what the challenges are and things of that nature. Another hiring manager suggested that you think of the interview process like it was speed dating. Now, I'm not sure I've ever speed dated, but I've been to a few speed networking events through the Chamber of Commerce and so on and so forth. So what they mean by that is, you know, hiring managers consider cultural fit just as much as they do technical fit. You may be a perfect technical match for a particular job. You may have the skills, the abilities, the training on software programs, whatever. But your personality, your belief system may be in total contrast to the company culture. The way you do business may be in total contrast to the company culture. So applicants need to know that before they go into go into an interview, that it's basically a business matchmaking game. And it needs to be a good fit for both sides. And they're looking for, hiring managers are looking for, not only your technical skills, but your compatibility with the team, the ability to fit into the culture. And you need to be able to make sure you ask questions to make sure you fit in the culture as well. Because again, it does need to fit both ways. And that leads me into the next thing that hiring managers really, see people fail to do. They want interviewees to come prepared with questions to ask them. Job seekers seem to forget, and hiring managers a lot of times shake their heads because of this, that they have just as much opportunity to ask questions about what it's like to work there so they can make sure it's a good fit for them. One of the hiring managers said that she's always shocked and actually disappointed when a candidate says no, I don't have any questions, when she asks them if they have any questions. And the reason why she's shocked and disappointed is because asking questions about what it's like to work there, what her duties would be, what the cultural fit is like, those kind of questions show that you've actually thought about the company and the opportunity and taken the initiative to do some research, and you're not just showing up hoping to get a paycheck. Obviously, we all want a paycheck. No one diminishes that reality. But as we've said many times on the show here, a career calling for the Lord is not supposed to be about just the paycheck. That's a byproduct of doing something worthy to glorify the Lord while at the same time providing for your family. And some great questions about what kind of questions to ask. This article lists several different types of questions that you could ask of an interviewer, and I'll link to those on careercallings.net for today's broadcast so that you can get to those as well. We'll talk a little bit more about these and other topics on the other side of the break. Stay tuned to Career Callings Radio. All right, I'm here with Kurt Restine with DCS Associates. And Kurt, just want to ask you, how do you see Teach Me Morpheus benefiting your business?
Before tax season starts, I get many of the same questions every single year from my clients. Morpheus is going to really help out in the aspect of a better client experience, being able to get their questions answered quickly. The other thing that's appealing about Morpheus is that I will be paid once those clients purchase that video. So that gives incentive to answer more questions and get good feedback from my clients as to what they want to learn about.
Help your customers make money for your organization. That's what TeachMeMorpheus.com, a new online learning platform, can do for your business or nonprofit. To learn more, check out TeachMeMorpheus.com, referral code HISRADIO. That's TeachMeMorpheus.com, referral code HISRADIO. Career mismatches cause people financial and emotional pain as they struggle to pay their bills and also to find meaning in their lives. The late Larry Burkett recognized this, and for nearly 30 years, Crown Ministries has helped hundreds of thousands of people around the world find, prepare for, and pursue the purpose-filled work God has called them to do. To learn more about how you or someone you love can use biblical wisdom to avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision, visit careercallings.net/discover, careercallings.net/discover.
But our lives aren't just measured in years. They're measured in the lives of people we touch around us.
This feels like my calling and my purpose in life. There's something different about this journey that's more heart connected.
Purpose is more than just your core of your own self. It's beyond your own identity. Everybody ultimately wants to serve other people.
You can have everything in life you want. You'll just help enough other people get what they want.
And that little bit of sadness in the mornings you spoke of, Perhaps you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Welcome back to Career Callings Radio. I'm your host, Robbie Romeiser. 864-381-7649 is how you can reach us by phone or text. That's 864-381-7649 or by email at Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E, at careercallings.net. Right before we left the last segment, we were finishing up a review of an article on Lifehacker that was entitled What Hiring Managers Wish You Knew About Applying for a Job. And there are several of the things we did not cover before the break, and there's only one other one I want to cover now. There's a few others I won't have time to cover on the show today, but again, as always, we'll link to this article at careercallings.net/radio so you can read the whole thing for yourself. But the last one I want to mention, which is a really good one, is this. Put yourself in the hiring manager's shoes. As the article goes on to say, hiring managers want you to know that they're people too, and they're not mind readers, and they are oftentimes faced with a giant stack of resumes and cover letters that all look the same. So when you're trying to prepare your resume and cover letter, try to stand out from the crowd by being a little bit more conversational. You know, if all of your letters are reading this way, dear sir or madam, I would like to apply for job X, blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's what you're going to normally get if you're a hiring manager. But let's just say you picked up a letter that was written this way. Dear Jeremy, I may not be the world's greatest marketer, but I am one of the world's most diehard LinkedIn fans. In fact, let me tell you about a time that LinkedIn changed my life. Now, this example came from a hiring manager that used to work at LinkedIn, and he got a letter like that. Who do you think he wanted to interview? Someone who actually caught his attention by doing something slightly outside the norm. So just keep that in mind as you go through preparing for the next job interview that you may be preparing for. And again, I would suggest you read through this entire article to get some other ideas that work for you. Now, one of the things we have to do as we go about trying to fulfill God's vocational calling in our lives, his career calling for our lives, is we have to make good decisions about that process. And of course, we ought to lay at the Lord's feet and ask him to supply us with the wisdom that we need for those decisions. And I just want to mention to you again here on the show that recently I produced a new video, Career Callings video, called How to Make the Right Decision Every Time, Biblical Decision Making, How to Make the Right Decision Every Time. And we've talked about that process many times on the program. We'll talk about it many more. But I would encourage you to check out careercallings.net/videos and link over to that. And if you were to purchase that video for $1.30, which is all it costs, you'll be helping support the Career Callings message as we try to grow our message into other markets, and also have at your disposal the biblical decision-making process of making decisions that honor the Lord each and every time. And I have no doubt in my mind that our next video clip or audio clip that we're about to play, the person involved here was certainly engaged in that decision-making process. And his name is Bob White. Bob White is a former pastor, as you'll hear in the audio clip, and throughout the Lord's leading in his decision-making process, he has found, as an 81-year-old, his next step in his career calling for the Lord, and I hope that you'll be as inspired by his story as I was.
I'm Bob White. I live in Owego, New York, with my wife, Allison. I'm 81 years old. After some 30 years in the pastoral ministry, I retired in 1999. When I got into retirement, I thought about all the things that I'd like to do that I haven't been able to do and pursued them. The one thing I'd never had the luxury of being able to do was to write fiction. So upon retirement, there were two things that I wanted to do, and that was to learn to fly gliders and to learn how to write fiction. So back to college I went to take this course in creative writing. I had no goals, but I always loved to tell stories. I didn't really know what I was doing. I would just simply write. Lo and behold, as I turned my assignments in, I found that I was getting good response from my tutor, my teacher. The last thing I ever expected was that I would write a book. A colleague writer up in Ithaca said, well, why don't you hook up with my husband? He has done self-publishing and he has a printer and everything. And his printer has been my printer and I've done self-publishing that way. Before long, I found that people were recognizing who I was and were asking me, when is your next book coming out? Every single one of my novels is based on either a historic fact that I've researched, or it's about information out of my travels and my history. I was in the Air Force for 4 years. I became a meteorologist and worked with the Weather Bureau and the first weather satellite systems, leading into a midlife change when I became an ordained minister with a Presbyterian church. For over 30 years, Allison and I were an ice dance team. We've had the opportunity to travel around the world twice, all the many things I've done in life. I think wrapping it up this way as a writer with published works has just been wonderful. Far be it from me to tell somebody how they should retire, but I find what works for me is to remain active. As we age, our brain requires activity. There's the challenge, the creative challenge of doing something different. And I would encourage everybody to think along those lines as they approach retirement and not just turn the crank and do what they've always done. Every day is a special day for me, and every day is a day that I'm grateful to be here for. Take every day as it comes and just be incredibly grateful and thankful for what I have.
Maestro, I want to test your knowledge of the Bible real quick before I make remarks about that audio clip. Do you remember how old Moses was when he was actually called of the Lord to lead the nation of Israel out of Egypt?
He had already left Egypt. He was already over there. He was married. He was...
Take a stab.
100.
That's not too terribly far off. He was 80 years old.
80.
Yep. He was 40 when he tried to deliver Israel on his own, in his own power.
Remember
and then
that.
He went to the wilderness and spent 40 years out in the wilderness. He was 80 when the Lord
there
said, it's now time. And Moses knew from a child that the Lord had raised him up for something special. But at age 40, he tried to do it in his own power. And age 80, he let God do it in his power. And God's timing is always perfect. Well, is Moses' story and Bob White's story, 80-ish, 81 years old, when he makes yet another transition in his career, just goes to show, no matter how old you are, I don't care if you're 20, I don't care if you're 40, 60, 80, 90, there is something that the Lord would have you to do. And, by the way, I don't know that I've ever seen anything about true retirement, as Americans think of it, in the Bible. Nowhere does the Bible laud people to sit around and watch TV all the time. We're always supposed to be doing something. So in Bob White's case, I've not read any of his novels, but regardless, he's doing something that he believes, I'm sure, is honoring the Lord. As a former pastor, I would imagine that would be his motivation. So no matter what age you're in, whether and your career calling doesn't necessarily have to be a paying calling. Maybe you are 70 or 80 years old, or maybe you're 45 and already retired because of great business decisions you've participated in the past. Your next career calling could be a volunteer calling, and that's still, I would consider, a career calling, because you're dedicating your time to doing something for the Lord's glory and for the benefit of yourself and others. And it doesn't always have to come with a paycheck, although most of us, we want it to, obviously. So I just wanted to share that story with you, that God has something for each and every one of us. Don't give up on that. Don't give up on that because of something you have had mentioned to you by someone you love, or someone at work, or something in the culture that says you can't do what the Lord has directed you to do. If God wants you to do something, He'll enable you to do it. And you just need to trust Him to do that. Now, we haven't had a good edition of stupid business decisions in a while. So, Maestro, if you don't mind, let's play Weird Al real quick.
Mm-hmm. technology and leverage our core competencies in order to holistically administrate exceptional synergy.
Oh, thank you, Weird Al. Weird Al Yankovic with Mission Statement. And that's all our intro theme music for an edition of Stupid Business Decisions. Probably one of the stupidest business decisions that people make. And I think many of us have made this same stupid business decision many times, is that we become so dedicated, enthralled with, focused on work-related matters that we tend to set aside family matters. Many people have heard of the common mantra, the work-life balance, the constant struggle for the work-life balance. And so oftentimes, I get it, from time to time, you might have to miss a ball game to get a business deal done. I've done that, and so will you as well. Many of you will, at least. But what I'm talking about is the chronic person who is missing everything in their family's lives because of their focus on work. And I want to just share with you some quick advice from a guy named Pat Gelsinger. He is widely known as the CEO of VMware, but he's been involved with many tech companies, including Intel, over his work life. He is a Christian, and he wrote a book back in around 2003 called The Juggling Act, Bringing Balance to Your Faith, Family, and Work. And this is an executive. This is a CEO. This is a guy that is all about workaholicism, if I can say it that way. But he said, he gave this very wonderful pearl of wisdom. Set aside the hours of 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. every night for your family. Block that time out for your family. And if you got to work to 3 a.m. in the morning to do business work from 9 a.m. to 3 a.m., that's fine. But from 9 p.m. to 3 a.m., that's fine. But from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., give that time to your family and only them. And that way you can help to keep that work-life balance there. CareerCallings.net/radio for a copy of today's broadcast.